It's a pleasure to be in with you tonight as we find out more and more about how things really work. It goes back to something I have stated repeatedly, probably ad nauseum to some of you, but this awakening that everybody wanted in 2012, it's happening, it's underway. And when we come back with Tosh, former CIA pilot and military DEA contract pilot, Panama, Colombia, Costa Rica, Cuba, you name it, the revelations of how things really work will strike you like steel. And then the question is the whole system, the whole global system, so absolutely corrupt that we just have to continue to roll with it because it's so big, so far down the road, and so old and reliable a system that there's just no dismantling it? We'll get into that with Robert Plumlee. We call him Tosh. This is Coast to Coast AM. Be right back. Okay, Tosh, let's pick up where we left off. You were saying once you can start ordering stuff, just pick whatever you want from the catalog and get it going on, you can make some, and you get the official clearance to put your task forces together and get it going on, then you're pretty much at liberty to do what you want. And you can make a sizable amount of cash doing that if you know what you're doing.
Well, that's absolutely right. Now, what I was going to point out here, and I'm going to speed it up a little bit because we're going to run out of time, and I'm probably boring your listeners here. But
You're absolutely not boring them, I can tell you that. And according to this email box, you're not boring them, so just roll with it. Do what you want.
To 63, things were starting to fall apart. It wasn't the same as it was earlier. It wasn't like you're fighting for freedom, you're fighting for this, you're doing this. So would you begin to doubt what you're doing, at least in my case. After Kennedy's assassination, things began to unravel big time. They become more specialized ops run by political in nature. Appointees that had absolutely no field experience began to dictate and set up operations that actually failed and got people killed because of lack of knowledge, politics, this type of thing. So there about, say, after 63 to about 69, I went out on what they call the farm. That meant that I wasn't active, and I didn't activate myself anymore. I didn't have a choice of what ops I wanted to play in. So I sort of went into hiding a little bit. Then all of a sudden the committees start coming up. Things began to unravel. That's when the church committee or, coming up into the 70s. So for about 5 years there, I didn't do anything. Otherwise, I went out and hid, become a prospector, did all kinds of things, sort of scared a little bit, and started my own business. And then when the church committee come along, a lot of the receipts, aircraft receipts, fuel receipts, and things like that started surfacing. My name was on some of those receipts from L.B. Smith Aircraft Corporation, Riddle Airlines, Intermountain Aviation, and Miranda Air Park, and down at Tucson, and things began to unravel. It looked like that I was going to get in big trouble, so I got called up and had to go back and testify to a committee. The House Select Committee was being formed at that time, and there was all kinds of things that were going on. So anyway, from about 69 till about 70, was actually 74, I'd started the business of aircraft business in Colorado, and was being very successful. And then IRS hit me, big time. I had 19 employees, lost the business. I had a pipeline company doing oil and gas, and I was very bitter about that. Got IRS liens filed on me for things that I did not file on when I was running ops. You can't very well fill out a tax return and explain where the hell you're getting your money when you're working for a CIA cutout company, for instance, Intermountain Aviation. I mean, I couldn't file a tax return for the $43,000 I made when I was working for Intermountain and other cutout companies that were financed by the CIA as front companies. So anyway, IRS decided, okay, because I was testifying, that they were going to shut me down, and they did. So I fought that for 10 years, stayed underground, I went back and finally decided, okay, the best protection I've got is to testify to a committee. So I testified to a committee, and damn, they didn't lock it top secret committee sensitive. So therefore, I couldn't talk about it anymore.
And how did you wind up appearing before this committee one more time?
Well, they started investigating things. Things were falling apart. I mean, inventories were not right. Documentation was coming to, there was people talking. People were going to jail for things that they had done, you know, ordered by, you know, their CIA case handlers. And when this documentation started coming forward, they started sending out, looking out for subpoenas, and they started going after flight crews. They started going after the people that actually carried out the operations, but they did not go after the people that actually launched the operations. So it was
normal.
So the only way that an op can protect himself is to go out with information before the fact. Well, when you go out with information before the fact and you start talking out of school, the first thing that hits you is the IRS, and they shut you back down. We're just like, hey, you're not gonna do this. We want to know where you got your money and how come you didn't file and all that. So then you say, well, I was working for the government and I was a sanctioned operative. They say bullshit. You got to prove. I'm sorry again. I did it again.
That's all right. That's all right. Sky Chief, gotcha.
Prove it to the people. You know, yeah. In other words, you've got one side of the government trying to bust you for illegal acts. And you got the other side of the government that's authorizing you to do the illegal acts. Now, what I mean by illegal acts is flying aircraft in and out of the country and using transponder codes to get back in to dodge around customs. Well, okay. Now, I went underground for about 5 years after I lost my business and all that. Got very bitter, and then when 74, 75 came along and they started the House Select Committee, there were some operations that I was involved with in that particular situation. So then I testified to Richard Sprague and Congressman Tom Downing before the House Select Committee was formed. Well, that got IRS back on me again. So anyhow, I went ahead and testified to those committees. And then from 70 to 75, I went totally underground and hid out. And I couldn't keep a job more than 90 days before they would catch up with me and garnish my wages. So then 75 come along, and then the drug war come along, and then of some friends of mine that were still in ops needed pilots, and I said I needed a job.
Oh,
and so I got a seat on the right-hand seat flying co-pilot. And on a sanctioned operation called it was called an interdiction program, and that was the beginning of me getting involved in the drug war. And so at that point in time, I started flying guns south and drugs back north on a sanctioned operation known as Grasshopper, and also another sanctioned operation known as Penetrate, and another one known as the Rooster Hop. So 75, 76, 77, and 78, those years were the beginning of Reagan's drug war, and that was also leading up prior to the Iran-Contra. So at that point, we were actually running drugs down into guns down into, not Central America, but down into South America, and that was the beginning of the Shining Path or whatever, you know. Some of those crews were running American guns from the direct commercial sales programs down south to finance or supply weapons to insurgents. And then they come up with a big idea that they could finance that by bringing drugs back into the country, use that as a cutout and finance the gun running operation. Now, this was before Iran-Contra.
Now, do I dare ask what happened to the drugs? Boy, I'm real tempted to ask where they were offloaded.
Well, maybe the drugs coming back, now I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but the drugs coming back would be allegedly be going into interdiction bins. You know, I mean, they would come back to be taken off the street, but they wouldn't. You know, I mean, we were waiting for them to get, you know, busted. Nobody ever got busted.
Right.
This Benz got broke into. They had a big case in Florida where something like, oh, God, I'll have to get how many kilos were taken out of that bin down there. But so there was a lot of pilfering going on from the drugs coming back. It's supposed to be an interdiction program, and the drugs were supposed to be destroyed. The reason that we were flying those operations was to establish the drug routes coming out of the southern, Central America through Mexico into the United States. And those routes were supposed to be shut down. And at the same time, we were supposed to find out who these new people that were that was starting up what they called at that time the cartels, which was then was the Choa Escobar cartel, Medellin, and the Colombian boys down there. So 78 comes along. The drug war is getting hot and heavy. And we're doing this interdiction program. Then around that time, around 1980, 82, we had a couple of pilots got busted for drug running, and they were on a sanctioned operation, and they started trying to spill the beans, but they ended up going to federal prison for drug running and been caught by customs. They had transponder codes to get into the United States legally, but that didn't cut any ice because customs closed them down. There's a friend of mine, John Carman, that knows something about in details about that kind of operation. He was I can't remember what he was, ATF or something like that. But anyhow, they these operations were coming back in with drugs, and so I decided that I wasn't going to go to jail. I was going to get popped. As a drug runner, and I'm claiming that I'm sanctioned. So I started documenting everything on a map, and took a military map. I wrote down all the aircraft ID numbers, the refueling staging points, everything that I could possibly get, the names of the pilots, and I put them on this map. And I turned the map over to Senator Gary Hart through Bill Holden, who was Senator Hart's advisor at that time. I don't know if you've seen a copy of the letter later, but so from 78 to 83, I flew tons of cocaine into this country and hundreds of guns into Central America through Mexico out of El Toro, the Marine Naval Air Station out there in California.
Well, you must have had to pick up fuel. I take it the Mexicans were okay with that, or were you able to make a straight shot?
Get to that. Yeah, we were paying Mexicans to set up staging and refueling areas inside Mexico. We were using some of their ranches.
Okay.
Timeline here I'm trying to sort of stay with. But
stay with it.
At one point, we had a ranch that we went into, and it was a guy that later bought it by the name of Carl Quintero. I'm getting up in here to the 80, 83, but I almost get back here a little bit. So in 83, I started making contact with Senator Hart's security advisor, Bill Holden. Started turning all the maps over to him. We had a series of meetings for 2 years, all the way up to 1985. And then that's when all kinds of stuff started breaking. So we started, the Iran-Contra was going strong. It had not broke at that point. The Nicaraguans, the Sandinista, was getting strong. They had the resistance fighters, as they called it at that point in time, that was on the northern front. So then Reagan began to want to set up a group known as the Freedom Fighters, and that was the beginning of setting up the southern front for the Contra. There was one obstacle, though. It was known as the Bolin Amendment, and it could not supply guns or weapons to that insurgency group down there because it would have been in violation of then the Bolin Amendment. So Reagan's administration, and he starts the Freedom Fighters with good intentions. However, setting up the Southern Front, they began to pilfer it off, making money off the guns, using the cocaine coming back into this country to finance the operation of the guns, and then they group, that clan I call down there, starts taking the money off the top. So they're getting a cut, much as 30 to 60% of the cocaine that's coming into the country to buy the guns that's going back down. So Ed Wilson was involved in that. He shipped guns to Libya. The Southern Front was set up by the Freedom Fighters. We started running guns down through Carl Quintero's ranch, who was a drug lord. And then that brought Kiki Camarena into the picture. So in essence of time, I'm skipping ahead here to up into around 85, 84, 85. Are you with me? Are you with me on this, or am I rambling?
No, totally. Just keep going. I'm just going to stay out of your way.
So, that's probably very boring, you know. But I'm
no, not in the least.
You know, this is it's very complicated. It's very convoluted.
Well, everybody's sick of being lied to, and which let me just now don't lose your train of thought. But I want to ask you something, Tosh. Why are you doing this?
Well, I'm doing it mainly for Kiki, Camarena. And also some of the DA boys that worked that operation. And the main thing is the truth about the truth that's out there, or what we call the truth, is not the truth. In other words, we've been lied to about this. They tried to character assassinate those that have tried to come forward to tell the truth. Some of these guys are now retired that played those ops. Back in their day when they were working, they couldn't come out and talk about those illegal operations that was in violation of the Boland Amendment. They would have lost their pensions, lost their job, and probably even lost their lives, and some of them did. So what am I doing it for? I'm doing it for truth. I'm 76 years old. I don't feel remorseful. I didn't do anything wrong. What I found out about this, I tried to expose it in 1983. And in 1985, to Senator Hart, and then we had tremendous meetings about this, and he even filed letters and requests to have the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to look into these allegations at that point, and to review the battle maps and the notations, but both committees turned him down. They refused to even look at it. And by the way, that's what got his campaign situation undermined. So here's the thing, the reason that I came forward. Everybody says the CIA was involved in killing Kiki Camarena. My contention is that the White House was involved in killing Kiki Camarena, if you want to call it like that. The reason I say that is that Camarena had been working an undercover operation and ended up busting a major, major $6 billion marijuana farm in Chihuahua, northern Mexico. He had complained to his supervisors many, many times, and this is on the record, that what does someone have to do? Get killed before you're going to look into what's going on down here? Now, what was going on down there was Kiki had found out about a gun-running operation going through a ranch in Veracruz. He had reported that to his supervisors, reported that back to the Reagan administration through the White House Situations Room and the National Security Council. The Reagan administration, in turn, sent a request down to the Iran-Contra Southern Front. It wasn't Iran at that point. It was known as Contra, the Southern Front, to have Kiki picked up by the DFS and interrogated to find out where and how he found out about the leak that was getting ready to undermine the violation of the Boland Amendment that the Reagan administration was running, an illegal arms operation going to fund out the Southern Front of the Contra.
Oh, man. Can you hold it right there and pick up when we come back? Okay. I don't know about you, but for some reason, my eyes are stinging a little bit. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back. Well, I'll tell you what, this is one of the most, this isn't a blockbuster. This is an A-bomb of an interview. I'll tell you, I can think of some of the people up in government that are just, they're loving this. Oh, well, as Zen Master says, We'll see. We'll be right back with Tosh. We're going to find out all about what happened to Kiki Camarino. There's stuff all over the net, executed on orders of the CIA, everything in the book. Why do you need to know this? Well, you wanted to know the truth, didn't you? So have a little taste. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Tosh, bring us back up to speed on who Enrique Camarena is.
Okay, Kiki Camarena was kidnapped, and he was abducted and tortured to death in Mexico. Now, the reason, the cover story that they used, the reason that he was kidnapped and eventually killed in the most hideous way was because that he had exposed the marijuana fields in northern Chihuahua, which was a $6 billion hit to the cartels, our cartel that had been working out of Mexico. In the process of finding that information in order to make the hit on the field, Kiki became aware of a gun-running operation that was coming out of this country, going south, and basically starting to set up. This was 1985. This was before the Iran-Contra broke. It didn't break until 86, the following year. Kiki found out about the gun-running operation that was coming through El Toro Marine Naval Air Station and other staging areas in the United States, going south to the new Iran-Contra, or the Contra Southern Front that was being formed. He had a meeting with the Tri-State Drug Task Force in Phoenix, Arizona, at the Oaxaca Cafe, and also with the Phoenix Organized Crime Division up there, and also CIA representatives. And I attended that meeting, and I talked to Kiki about this. And I had been one of the pilots that had been flying that operation. There was another DEA agent that had been investigating the death of a reporter down there by Wendea, that was also killed because he had found out basically the same thing about gun running and drug running.
And the dope was coming into El Toro.
Dope was coming all over the desert southwest, Borrego Springs, into the 29 Palms area, up all the way up into Palmdale, drop-off points in Arizona, Bill Williams Fork, abandoned airfields, kick-out points. And at that point, some of them were coming back, and it was being kicked out over the desert around Moab, Utah, and places like that. Okay. There's press reports where some of the loads had been found by citizens there and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, the operation was falling apart. The White House Situations Room had been discussing this problem, and they forwarded the information to the Pentagon. The Pentagon, in turn, made contact with the Southern Front down in Costa Rica, Contra Southern Front, and they wanted to know where the leak and how Kiki had found out about the gun running in violation of the Boland Amendment. That's basically what sealed Kiki's death warrant. The DFS, who was a corruption and also tied in with Carl Quintero's ranch, who was just recently released from prison. That's a whole other story here. I don't know if we're going to have time to get into all that. But so at any rate, Kiki was kidnapped, picked up. The cover story was that they got him because he had caused the exposure of the marijuana fields in Chihuahua, when in reality he was picked up to be interrogated to find out where his leaks were where the leaks had been coming from and how he found out about the gun running in violation of the Boland Amendment. The Reagan administration had started that ball rolling through the White House Situations Room and the National Security Council. They in turn requested that he be interrogated. It was not intended that he'd be killed, but in the process of the interrogation, and there was two CIA operatives there at the interrogation, one of the CIA operatives filmed the torture, or not filmed it, but recorded the torture. There was a total of seven leaks. The CIA turned those tapes over to a DEA DEA agent. The DEA agent made a field report on this. And that DEA agent had been investigating, two DEA agents had been investigating the Buendia killing And now they had a Kiki Camarena kidnapping and killing. That information had came from the White House back to the National Security Council to the Pentagon. The Pentagon made the request. Kiki was picked up later, 2 days later, his body and that of his pilot was found. I knew his pilot. His pilot was a good friend of mine. So that's the story behind Kiki up to the to that point. Are you with me on this, John? I mean,
So the inside guys wanted to find out where the leaks in their operation were.
Right. Now, because there was two undercover CIA operatives on scene there when he was being interrogated, one of them could not expose himself at that point because he would have been killed also. So he's the guy that taped the tapes and turned those tapes over later to this agent that was telling you that was heading up the Kiki Camarena investigation. I think he had something like 123 agents that he was in charge of. I would say his name, but I don't really want to say his name on, you know.
No, that's okay.
It's on a record. it is recorded. It's documented. Everything I'm telling you is documented.
I get it.
And some of it's still, I think I sent you some files there, some secret files.
I got stuff with stamps all over it.
Okay, well, I mean, they've been declassified since then. They've been out on the Internet.
Okay, good. Thank you.
There's no.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
I didn't want to put you in a spot there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
But so everything is in those records. So at that point in time, the fuel receipts, the load manifest from the C-130s that I'd been flying down into Carl's Ranch began to show up. And as a result of that, I was in the Gary Hart letter, which I think I sent you a copy of.
Yep.
And it goes into detail about the Cuban advisors that was infiltrating into Nicaragua. It goes into the ranch and the training of the Nicaraguan guerrillas there on Carl's Ranch, and also about the guns going into Carl to be given to the guerrillas that was setting up the Southern Front. So, I mean, this is a little hard for me to tell you, go in there to this kind of detail. So there was a communications expert that was sent down from San Diego to set up the repeater stations and the homing beacons so that we could use those to get in and out of the ranch and get into Santa Elena, which was known as Point West at that point. They brought in a Marine colonel to head up that southern operation, and we know what all that led into and the names that was exposed in that. That led into the Iran-Contra, and then during the process, they found out that we were sending Hawk missiles to Iran. We were selling weapons and sending the Hawk missiles also to Iran. That's when it became known as the Iran-Contra affair. Mm-hmm. Iran, the weapons were going to Iran. Weapons were going to the Southern Front. There were 6,000 Cuban advisors going into the northern parts of Nicaragua. Reagan started the big Freedom Fighters, which was in good intentions. The president, he had good intentions on that. It was to stop communism spread in the South, in Central America. That was the reason that the Freedom Fighters were formed. The Southern Front was formed in order to stop the aggression that was going on through the Sandinista. So, but in the process of that, Kiki and others got caught up in it. Buendia got caught up in it. Kiki got caught up in it. But it wasn't over the drug running. It was over the gun running. Carl Quintero was eventually picked up, and he was indicted for the murder in Mexico of Kiki Camarena. He served, I think, as a 50-year sentence or something like that. He ended up serving 28 years. We had a request for his extradition. Mexico let him out early, and we did not follow up on extradition. And the reason that Carl Quintero got out of prison is that he threatened when the new administration came in Mexico and the DFS disbanded or was reformed into the citizens. Then at that point in time, Carl told him he was going to tell everything about the training of the ranch and about the payoffs that they had received from the United States government in order to run the operation as a refueling network to fund the Southern Front of the Contra. There,
Jesus,
I said that.
Excuse me, sorry.
Are you with me on this?
Oh, yeah, I'm afraid I am, yeah.
So therefore, that is the motive and the reason that we have not requested requested Carl Quintero's extradition back into the United States.
Tosh, this is some strong...
Basically, we're protecting the legacy of not only the sitting president, but the National Security Council. We're protecting the legacy of some DEA operatives, and also the CIA legacy on doing logistical support in order to carry that operation out. That operation was totally in violation of the Bolin Amendment. If that information had been exposed at that particular time, President Reagan would have been impeached. And other politicians who had received campaign contributions from the funds that were sold for the weapons and kicked back into their campaign contributions, they would have been exposed also.
So there's way more money in arms than there is in dope.
The whole thing was arms, not dope.
Gotcha.
Dope was a diversion. The $60 billion that we've spent, over 60, good God, it's more than that now, in fighting a drug war is nothing more than a diversion to take it away from the guns that we're running all over the damn world. Now we bring it up in the same type program. We go back to the Cuba. I said, dust it off. We got the same thing operating. We had the same thing with Fast and Furious of guns going across the border. We had an agent killed with guns coming from the direct commercial sales program that's run by the State Department that was picked up inside Mexico. Mexico is furious about the guns that does not come from mom-and-pop operations that are being found today on the streets of Mexico, hand grenades, all this stuff. These things have been pilfered off of a legal program that runs guns. I get out of breath when I'm talking about this. I hope you're
better. That's all right.
Running
I'm
guns
out of breath
into
myself.
Mexico, all the way into southern, into Central America, and this money is skimmed off and goes God knows where. Out of the $97 billion that went to Saudi Arabia on guns, less than 3% come back into our treasury. Where did the rest of the money go? Now, these are questions that reporters and mainstream media should be asking.
Do you reckon this is why
they refuse to ask?
Do you reckon why this is Saudi Arabia, is Saudi Arabia's cross with us over non-engagement in Syria? That's what I'm thinking.
Well, I'm leading up to that.
Okay.
I started a Facebook page to post this stuff before the fact. Mexico is furious. Mexico has called our ambassador, and we have refusing to send our ambassador to talk about what I just told you on a radio show nationwide. And this can probably get me in a hell of a lot of trouble, but it's the truth. And it's time for the truth to come out for the sake of Kiki and all those other guys that have lost their lives and those people that went to prison in order to protect an illegal operation that was implemented by our United States government.
Well, if this isn't all over the news on Monday, I guess we'll know who's been bought and paid for, won't we?
I was interviewed by Fox News for 45 minutes. I got exactly 10 seconds next to an airplane. And I was set up that I was the pilot that got Kiki Camarena out of the country so that he wouldn't get arrested. True, I did fly, not Kiki Camarena, I'm sorry, Carl Quintero. I flew Carl Quintero out of the country to Guatemala. It was reported or inferred that I flew him out so he wouldn't be arrested. Everything about CIA logistical support, everything about the National Security Council, and everything about Fawn Hall and Ollie North destroying the documentation that approves everything that I just said was cut out of that interview. Everything about Benghazi and the guns going over to Benghazi and C-130s to Jordan and Qatar and Turkey was cut out of that interview. My question is this. They have a contributor to their station who was involved in the Southern Front. He reviewed my tapes.
Why am I not surprised?
I don't know why you're not surprised. You know, so he and I are going to have a running battle over this.
Well, I got a feeling you're going to win.
My credibility has been, my life has been put on the line by what they did. So I opened up a Facebook page, and I started putting everything down, and I went back and started gathering all this documentation, including the Gary Hart letter, including the secret documents of the DEA, and my friend Bareilles, and Jordan, and Carmen, and also Sully Castile. This guy went to prison. He got set up, went to prison, because he and I watched the guns being unloaded in Hangar 3 in Ilopango. And he documented all that through his DEA handlers. And this is all documented. But mainstream media in our country will not handle it, will not touch it. But now, since they've got a new administration in Mexico, they've dove into the documents from the old DFS, and they found the cables that came from the White House asking for information about where the leak was. The DFS was working with the CIA on an illegal operation, and they got Kiki killed. Does that make sense to you?
I'm afraid it does.
Now, so why can't we get a congressional committee to reopen this thing? The Gary Hart letter, the last sentence in that letter that you saw that was done in 1991, right after a Marine Colonel James Sabol was killed, that was a commander, wing commander at El Toro, that found out about the gun running. And he also found out about the drugs coming back into El Toro in C-130s. His name was Colonel James Sabol. So in 1991, he gets whacked. Kiki Camarena gets whacked in 85. And Buendia, the reporter that also was getting ready to report the gun running from the United States into Mexico, he got whacked in 84, a few months before Kiki got whacked. So now, where am I going with this? Who destroyed the paperwork in the Pentagon? Do you know what I'm making reference to there, John?
Yeah, I believe I do.
All right. The lady's name was Fawn Hall. At the direction of who? Now, this was all told to Senator Kerry in 1991, and Hector Bareilles, a decorated DEA agent, and another Phil Jordan, a decorated DEA agent who was in charge of the intelligence, they all testified to Senator Kerry's committee, as well as I. The Senator Hart letter was turned over to, and the maps and the fuel receipts and the pictures of the guns was all turned over to Senator Kerry's committee on foreign relations, narcotics and foreign relations, an investigation of the Iran-Contra. Abrams and Elliott, those things were turned over. You can find that in their Section 25. It's all recorded in the Iran-Contra investigation by Welch. So this is not something that can't be taken. The only thing I did was my Facebook page, and we're running out of time, I see.
No, we're good. We're on daylight savings time, or wait a minute. I don't know, whatever we're on. We got another hour. Yeah. No. I won't do that to you, but we got another hour.
All right. Okay, so, John, this has got to be right, because, I know how the media works now. I mean, like for instance, one thing that brought me forward, I read these reports that the CIA killed Kiki Camarena, or the CIA was involved in killing Kiki Camarena. Okay, that is true, but the CIA was working an undercover operation known as Penetrate, and they had one agent in there. Now, I don't know who that agent was, but I do know the references were made by good qualified DEA agents who that agent was, and there's three Cubans involved in that, and these these Cubans were CIA operatives.
Oh, perfect. I'll tell you what, let's... Man, is this something or is this something? All right, let's take a little break and come back. Let's just burn through this next hour, because this is absolutely amazing. I want to ask you about Oliver North when we come back too. Fashion plate man. All right, we'll be back with Tosh. Keep the seatbelt on, please. Maybe more turbulence ahead. This is Coast to Coast AM.